This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 281, brought to you by Graphically and iFanboy listeners just like you.
Get the rocks in the box. Get the water right down to your socks. This bulkhead's built of fallen brethren bones. We all do what we can. We endure our fellow man. And we sing our songs to the head frames, kicks and moans.
Hey, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 281. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Ron's got a date, apparently.
And Josh Flanagan.
Yeah, it's me.
I'm just keeping things moving.
It's Mario.
We are from the website ifanboy.com. That's all about comics and the wonderful world of comic books. And involved in that, we get to read a lot of comics every week. And then one of us goes to the website on Wednesday and writes what we deem was the pick of the week, which was the book that we enjoyed the most that week, writes a review of it. And then we come back here to discuss it amongst the three of us, as well as the other books that came out every week, and have some compelling discussion. It's quite therapeutic.
Compelling.
I thought you were going to say companionship.
That's what it is.
Have some companionship.
So before we get to the show, a quick reminder and a warning. We're going to talk about what happens in the comic books themselves, and some people consider that spoiling them. We're not looking to spoil anything. We're enjoying them. But if you haven't read your comics yet, you might want to press pause, come back after you've read them, and listen so you can take part in the enjoyment, or just, you know, be risky.
We got another email about that.
Did we really? Somebody complained? Did they not hear this part?
I don't know.
I got an email from a friend of mine, and he's like, I know about the spoiler warning, and I don't think about it anymore, but I hadn't read Brightest Day yet. And it was right there in the middle, but I usually don't worry about it. But I was really upset about that one. Well, so
we warned you. Sorry.
Yeah, no, he's not your fault.
No, but no culpability. So this week, Josh had the pick, and boy, did he blow it!
I don't know what you're going to say was the pick, and that's what I'm kind of interested in. This week for the pick of the week, I chose the Sixth Gun number 11, and for a good time on Wednesday, it was like 60% of the pick. I was like, wow, I really did get the heart of the people this time.
I just want to clarify, I like the Sixth Gun. I'm not bashing the Sixth Gun. Sorry. All right, carry on.
The Sixth Gun number 11 is sort of the end of the second story arc. And, you know, at the end of it, I thought it was really just sort of a really nice ending to the arc. And just like the end of the first arc, by the time like it ended, you had this satisfying feeling of closure with the sort of particular story. But the larger thing had been also opened up too, which I thought was really nice because it's a bigger world to go into, and it was just kind of an exciting issue as the forces of good battle the forces of evil in a graveyard at night, and it's sort of everything that's sort of mystical Western horror book is supposed to be. And then at the very end, there was just this great shot of the coffin. I don't remember the character's name, but the dead guy who the evil undead general dude. And he's in this train car that looks perfectly innocuous from the outside, but inside is just like it's a coffin. It's all chained up, and there's crucifixes painted everywhere and hanging on everything and all over the floor. And I was like, this is a really nice cap about what we're dealing with in this world. And then as I started thinking about it more, one of the other things that really impresses me about this is that every page, like this was all action and excitement through the whole thing, and just every page is just chock full of art. Like Brian Hurt is not phoning it in on any level with this stuff. It's just, there's just all these birds flying all over the place and beasts, and there's all these sort of dead people risen from their graves, and a new group of sort of allies shows up. At the end of the last issue, you thought there were going to be more enemies, but I was kind of like, oh, good, they're on the good guys' side. That's nice. And they're sort of mysterious gunfighting priests, which was fun. And I love period pieces, and one of the things that's best about this is that I think it really does live in the period in which it's written. Like the cities are drawn in such a way with the sort of cable cars and all the clothing, and it's an all around package that I think I really like about it. And the guys are coming out with it really regularly, and I want to know what happens next, and I really have gotten to know the characters. I'm a big fan of. Right down to the names.
I was gonna say, as soon as I read this issue and saw that Bill John had a fairly big role in it, I figured, oh, that's probably why he got the pick.
No, like I just like
to this, and to this day, the C2E2 food, for people who don't know, the C2E2 food court had the food was named after comic characters, and there was the Bill John brisket sandwich that was the star of the weekend.
Oh, that was delicious.
Yeah, it really was.
It was a good sandwich on top of being named after a character I liked.
Exactly. It was a great name, Bill John Brisket. It was good.
Bill John Brisket.
That was good.
Oh, but, just like too. All the other names are like the Bill John's a great name, and like Becky Montcrief and Drake Sinclair and Kirby Hale. Like they're just like they're kind of silly, but they work in this context really well, and you can't do that in sort of a modern day story. I don't know. It was just a really strong issue, and I thought that as a sort of culmination of the second arc, it was kind of the thing that made me happiest out of the books that I read this week. And I just think the guys are doing a really great job with it. and I was really glad to see in the comments of the pick of the week, all these people like, I got to try this. I want, and because I really want people to try it. I want people to pick the book up. I think it's worth, it's totally worth it. And it's just two guys basically working on it. It's colored by Bill Crabtree, but Brian Hurt does all the penciling, inking, and the lettering in it, And
he was coloring it too for a while too.
Exactly.
He's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can tell just by looking at these pages, like they're full. He's putting in all of his effort. Hurt's a guy who's been around for a while. I'm going to say at least 10 years.
He did Country. He did a lot of stuff that you probably have read, don't realize.
That prison book that I really liked was written by Steve Gerber. I can't think of what it's called. No. Oz.
Jane Heat.
I have the trade somewhere.
Ron, really you have a counterpoint.
I have a counterpoint?
Well, you don't necessarily think this was the pick of the
week. Well, yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's like I really enjoy it. And don't get me wrong. I think that this is actually some of Cullen Bunn and Brian Hurt's best work. Like, this is like the work of their career, and crime that it wasn't nominated for an Eisner. And I totally support all that. But I didn't really love this arc. I didn't really love New Orleans. I didn't love the trip that it took down here. I'm kind of curious about the longevity of the series, because is it just basically, okay, we got to keep these guns from people? You know, and
solve that problem while they're being attacked by the missiles.
Sure.
This is,
yeah.
To be fair, this is not exactly your kind of thing.
No, I don't. And I've been
anyway.
Yeah, and I've been enjoying it. And I'll continue to read it, because I do. I think the art is great, and the fact that the guns were hidden in Bill John was awesome, and all that stuff. But like, I just like in this particular arc, I wavered a little on some issues, and then with this last issue, you know, yes, it was good. It was the end of the story and big battle, and kind of culminated. But compared to some of the other books I read this week, which, and we were discussing before the show, and you guys weren't that too enthused this week, but I had a great stack of books, and
you may have read books I didn't
read. Yeah, probably. Yeah, no, exactly.
There was a couple of really great ones. I dropped off this for trades because
really?
Around the end of the first arc, I started to lose the thread every month.
Yeah, yeah.
It all in a chunk.
Well, I mean, look at the example there where you're talking about how stunning and great the shot of the coffin is, but you don't know who's in the coffin.
I don't remember anything.
Right.
I mean,
that says something about the book. I mean, that says something.
That's everything about me. I have a baby. I don't remember.
Well, that excuse is getting old.
No, literally, since that's all, like, I can't, my memory's shot. Yeah. It has nothing to do with that. Like, I don't remember names for anything, but like, I don't remember people's names, but like, I knew where we were. I knew what was happening. As soon as I started, I was like, I remember where we left off. That's not at all a problem for me.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that's indicative.
Yeah. But
I don't think it is either. That's just, I think most books for me that aren't the regular superhero action stuff, I tend to want to read and trade anyway. So it wasn't an indictment of the book. I just dropped off of it.
And me by saying I don't think it was the pick of the week was purely because I think we read different books, and there was some stuff that I think, you know, that was slightly better that I read that I would have enjoyed if it was my pick. But that's why we're here. That's the difference. Differences make the world go round. I do like the creepy green ghost children though. That was
it felt like the end of a story. It was sort of all the pieces were in place, and like I just like how sort of effectively this little world has been being built, and every time we get to the end of something, there's more in front of us, but at the same time, like you feel like you've come to a bit of a conclusion, and then you can go to the next step with more. And if you read, you know, if you go back and read The Damned that they did before, perfectly great book, I really liked it, but this is stronger than that. It just shows a more mature storyteller, and I can see that, and that is impressive to me as well. So all of those things coming together, and you know, it just made I really appreciate it, I guess. And so for me this week, that was the one that I was most tickled by. There were other books that were great. The next thing, I always forget. Now, Ron, you do read Invincible.
Yep, in issues. Correct.
Okay. And then Connor, you're in trades, which is this is where we just ruin the book for you all the time.
Yeah, whatever. I don't remember any of
this. Lately though. So this
is she still is fat? Is that what's
actually, and I've got a point about that actually too. But yeah. So
well, okay. Here's the spoiler warning. Well, I'm not trying to decide whether I want to talk about it or not.
Oh, for
but, oh, what you're talking about the? You revealed it in the panels post.
Did I? No, I didn't.
You're talking about Immortal.
No, I'm talking about the thing that happened at the end of the issue.
Oh, okay.
Why she's fat.
Yeah. That we shouldn't – I mean, I don't want to spoil it for Connor. Yeah,
if you read it, you know exactly what it was. And I was like, wow, Kirkman.
Well, something happened to Eve while Invincible was gone for the 10 months, and that gave her a lot of emotional stress, and that's in part of the reason that's why she's gained weight. And like, it actually if you watched the video interview I did with Kirkman at WonderCon in between the insanity, you know, I really like what he did with this, and that, you know, he brought that kind of, and he credited it to Larson and what he's done in Savage Dragon, is that these are real people and real shit happens, and 10 months went by, shit went down, and so she gained weight, and that's what happens. That's what happens into real life, and this gives it the context where you can understand why she's in the state that she's in, and why, you know, you could tell there was something wrong. You could tell there was a weight, quote unquote, on her shoulders. And I thought he did a great job of building up to it and then dropping that bomb at the end, and it was like, damn, shit got real.
Exactly. And I gotta say, like, I don't ever know where this book is going.
Yeah.
And I really like that part about it. Like, yeah. I would have said that wouldn't have happened in a million years.
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
I would not have expected that choice to be made. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Whether it's, you know, melodramatic or whether it's, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I like that the book has those two sides. And,
yeah.
Like, you know, we just spent a year in space fighting, you know, and now we got to deal with this, like, you know, nighttime drama kind of love stuff.
I do gotta say that I absolutely loved the opening scenes. Like, there's the second page is a full page splash of Invincible, and then like the next two pages of Invincible kind of back in action, and like they're the six vertical panels, but then the second page you've got him flying in, and like it, like the art and the layout in this issue was really, really strong. And then there were the little quirks, like this is what we were talking about, like they go Invincible and Eve go visit Immortal and his wife and have dinner with them, he's retired, and that it was in the best panels where they're showing the dinner conversation and Immortal going on about how he feels bad about John Wilkes Booth because turns out Immortal was Lincoln, and how John Wilkes Booth didn't really kill him because he didn't die, but they couldn't say anything and he feels bad for him, and like
that manhunt was just a nightmare.
It was excruciating. That's what he said. Yeah, it was just like that made me laugh out loud. And like,
I mean, if you know me, like I've read books on this subject. You know, I just went to see them. Like, I was like, that was fantastic. But also, like overall, that page,
Is
basically just the same shot four or five times,
right?
But like a different snatches of the conversation. I love those kind of slice of life pages in comics.
Yeah, and the thing is, and we'll get into this a little later on when we talk about Wolverine. But like the balance of this really serious or the action with a little bit of humor injected to it, it really gives like a well-rounded comic book. My only criticism with this issue is that I don't think Otley's comfortable drawing Eve fat, because like it changes wildly from panel to panel.
Huh?
The way she looks.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't think I really noticed that. I think it's odd because it's a comic book, and comic books you're so used to seeing things that are like exaggerated. It's hard to tell what's fat and what's just
exactly. That's like if you compare the two pages where she's talking to Invincible's mom, and like that first panel, both her and his mom look awful. You know, and like, and then if you jump to this, the dinner scenes or the scenes when she's with the kids, you know, and the bath and stuff like that, it just she wildly, sometimes she draws really fast with like jowls, but then sometimes she's kind of normal, it just looks a little thicker, and then like, and like she, like I think he's still figuring out how to draw her in this state, which is, you know, which is a challenge, which I, you know,
well, those pages are goners.
Yeah, burn them. Crazy motherfucker.
He started a trend too.
Did he really? Who else did it?
A bunch of other people on Twitter.
Oh yeah. Oh, really? Nettie threw a bunch of them away too.
Oh my god.
I know. I get it. They have the listen.
And again, I loved Kirkman's response when we talked about it. He's like, he has my FedEx number. Like, I don't know. God.
They have the choice. They can make that choice. It's a free country.
Yeah. Yeah. Just painful.
I don't want to know about it.
Yeah.
And on the other side of things, the stuff that was going on in that issue, Kirkman also released Super Dinosaur number one with art by Jason Howard, who did Astounding Wolfman. Astonishing Wolfman. I always get it mixed up. Astounding. I think it's Astounding. This is an all ages book about a genius boy and his dinosaur sidekick and his armored, weaponized vest.
His arms.
Yeah.
I love it.
Joysticks.
Yeah. Oh.
This was a lot of, it's an all ages book. So if you're looking for like all that deep stuff, it's not really there. Although there was like a turn for drama at the end.
Oh yeah. Well, again, it was very similar to Invincible where it was like, oh shit got real. Like it was, you know, like it wasn't, it was not, what's great is that it's totally all ages. And like reading this, I felt like I was reading one of the Man on Action cartoons.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it totally had like a Generator Rex kind of feel, you know, like to it.
Like a toy series pitch.
Yeah, exactly. And I hope it goes that way because it's just like, and it was just like so much fun. And I don't know if it's for me, but I could definitely see like it was great. And it was like, I had a blast. And then it gets to the end and I was like, oh shit, he's not going to pander. Like this is going to be, you know, it's going to have that, you know, it's
Alzheimer's.
Yeah, exactly. So basically the premise is that this kid is very, very smart and he lives in this base and they have this dinosaur and they've built this, you know, these arms that the dinosaur wears, and they go out and they fight things, and
it's all predicated on the genius of the kid's father,
right? But however, you get a sense of it where the father father is you know, silver haired, and he shows him, he's just like, oh, I can't focus, kind of early on in the book, and he's working on a big problem. There's all this math, and the kid sends the dad and says, go to bed, and then you see the kid look and correct the math, and then does it right, and so you realize, okay, cool. So the, you know, obviously the intelligence is passed down to the kid, and the dad has lost a couple steps, and then you've got these people coming to review their performance, and at the end of it, you know, you get the kid saying to the guy, saying, listen, please don't, you know, I hope that, you know, we don't need to report my dad's condition, and the dad hears that and is like, what condition? And it gets really dramatic, and it's, and the dad dealing with the fact that he's not as smart as he used to be, and then you get this horrible shot of the kid looking up, and you know, it ends with him saying, you know, I'm awesome, I'm just not awesome enough to fix my dad. And it's just like, oh man, it's like, yeah, so it's got that weight. So even it's, you know, it's not just playing down to a kid's book and just having a rad dinosaur with robot arms and fights and stuff like that. It's having a level of drama and reality that they have to deal with. So
it's that Peter Parker responsibility thing,
yeah,
that sort of guilty conscious thing. The other thing that I do want to mention about this is that this is actually a bit of a slightly different artistic style from Howard.
Yeah,
and I really like it. I was like, wow, this is actually really strong.
Yeah,
I thought it was really clean. It was nice. If you, I think there were some people who weren't into that Wolfman style for whatever reason. I totally, it was like that dynamic, big sort of line drawn, I guess, cartoony style. But yeah, this is just a little different from that. And I was like, wow, that's a really nice sort of step forward, I thought.
Yeah, so.
And it fit.
Good stuff.
And now I'm guessing that the book that you, based on what everybody else had been was saying, Uncanny X-Force number 8 was pretty good.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
This
well.
Is oh, oh no, oh god, what I was going to say about this book was that for some, I don't know what deal with Satan Remender has made or what Marvel's done, but there's something about this title and this book that is making it not only not do any wrong, but fucking tap into the awesomeness of what was X books and the 90s and the 80s. And like, even, I mean, Billy Tan did the art. And
that was the problem.
I didn't think it was. I honestly didn't think it was a problem. I thought it was. I actually thought it was. I thought it stayed within the color palette. It stayed within.
Dean White colored it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Let's
keep in mind that the tan we don't like is not this one. It's the other one.
No, both tans I don't like.
Well, yeah, I know.
The
this wasn't the Batman and Robin tan.
No, that's Philip tan. Yeah. Uncanny X-Force and Uncanny X-Men and Wolverine. And it's a really good time to be reading X-Books.
It's really good. Yeah.
We'll talk about Wolverine in a second, but story-wise, Uncanny X-Force was great. The difference in this issue was between Jerome Pena and Ribic. It's Saad Ribic, I think you said his name.
Yeah.
You can really, the difference is glaring between them and Billy Tan. Those are super dynamic, super high energy artists, and everything Billy Tan draws is super stiff. Even with the coloring, it was just very boringly laid out and very boring to look at, which was a problem for me. It took away a little bit from the issue, which was otherwise great.
But that's the thing, is that I don't disagree with that, but I feel as if this is the best thing from Billy Tan I've ever seen.
A lot of it has to do with Dean White's color.
Oh, I think the importance of the coloring and is someone inking him or no? Yeah, no. So it's Tan's inking himself, or they're coloring it over his pencils. But yeah, I mean, it shows how important that palette is. It shows stuff like that. But Tan tapped into what Ribic and Opeña was doing, and I think brought up his game to try to stylistically match what they were doing. And it, like, I did a double take because I didn't believe that it was him. I was like, whoa, you know, like. And but I do agree with you in that it's not as like, oh god, I want Opeña more than him. But then also I'll freely admit that I'm, you know, you give me Psylocke in the astroplane armor that we haven't seen since fucking Jim Lee 1988 or 1989 or whatever, and I'm completely, you know, giggling, you know, like,
he's
give me the
tickling your Richard Z. Funny Bone.
Yeah, like give me the Shadow King, who I think is an underused villain. And like this issue was like so much fun from an X standpoint in terms of tapping into you know, stuff that's been around, that's never not really been dealt with. And it's not like he's picking up dead plot lines, but he's picking up stuff that has been done before and saying, you know, this wasn't bad, and here it is. It's a part of it, and then moving his story along. I just love the direction it's going in, and this is such a great issue.
Jeff Luck on the team now.
Kind of, I don't know. I think they're working with him. I don't think he's on the team. I don't know.
Great. No, but the story is great. And then at the end, you have a great ending where Archangel basically murders someone.
Yeah.
When he's alone, and so everyone shows up after he's dead. He's like, "Oh, it must have been a life or death situation, right?" And he just sort of walks away. So
yeah,
Now you've got a serious issue now with Archangel, where the darkness is taking over from the angel.
Well, yeah, the apocalypse. And what was really interesting was that basically they're investigating and they uncover the Shadow King, who is a very strong telepath, and and on the astral plane he's having a couple of bouts with Psylocke, and that's why she's in her astral plane armor. And they're fighting, and great little cameo in her psyche of her brothers, of Captain Britain and Jamie Braddock, which is always cool. Somehow the Shadow King goes into Angel's head and finds the Archangel part, the apocalypse part of him that she has like put into a mental cage. And what I thought was really interesting, which was a nice subtle in the art, did you notice in those scenes on the astral plane of Archangel had the little tubes with his arms, kind of like the Apocalypse-esque, like he's kind of looking more like Apocalypse and less like Archangel, which was a nice touch, which is really
the Apocalypse armor on.
Yeah. And so like you had a scene early in the issue where she's working with Archangel or Angel in like an astral therapy kind of session, where she finds the Archangel part of his persona and locks him up and kind of locks him down, and the Shadow King unleashes him, and that's what happens at the end of the issue. Again, a lot of stuff happening in one issue, really tight, really like the storytelling, and it is exactly what needs to be done. There's nothing superfluous, and just like everything works towards the story to move it forward, and you still get the little bit of Deadpool humor and Deadpool and Wolverine kind of banter and a little bit of Phantom X, and it's something really special is going on with this title, and if people aren't reading it, it's just like, oh, it's so good.
Well, to me, the far and away pick of the week was Wolverine number 8.
Absolutely, and I agree. That's what I agree with. Absolutely.
Which Jason Aaron is, between this and the last Wolverine book he wrote, is ridiculously suited for writing Wolverine.
Yeah.
This might be the best Wolverine series I've ever read.
I was going to say, and it's really funny because how we kind of I groaned a little bit at Wolverine in Hell, and then we groaned with, Wolverine gets taken over again. Like, I had some conversation in the comic book store, like, how many, why does everybody always tell the Wolverine gets taken over and fights the X-Men, kind of story? But, like, Aaron refers to that.
Yep.
Like, where they're like, how many times is this going to happen? So he's aware of it, and, like, that. So acknowledging it head on is awesome, and then. Again, that balance of like, there's a lot of action.
There's a lot of humor.
I was gonna say, there's a lot of action and there's a lot of drama and there's a lot of like emotion in it, but mixed in with this humor, specifically like, so you've got all the women in his life. You've got Kitty Pryde and Jubilee, and is Psylocke there and Rogue there? I forget who the women are. Rogue is there. Emma Frost is there. They're all inside Wolverine's head trying to fight whatever demons inside. While you've got Phantom X and Dr. Nemesis and Storm and Cyclops trying to take Wolverine down on the outside, and inside Wolverine's head, you've got all these doors that are marked, and inside those doors they uncover something, and the doors are marked like hopes and dreams, reasons I hate myself, X-Men I've had sex with, how I cheat at cards, and you've got the point of view of these women, and like, so like Rogue looks into the how I cheat at cards and she just goes, I knew it, like, it's like and then like Jubilee goes into the X-Men I've had sex with room and says, that's definitely not what the Danger Room was meant for, and like it's just like,
a sexual fantasy room with all the X-Men are in there, like it's just, it was very funny in the midst of the really, and then the emotional gut punch is when the Jean Grey of his brain shows up.
Yeah.
Which made me really miss Jean Grey and decided it's time to bring her back.
And not only miss Jean Grey, but miss the Jean Cyclops Wolverine dynamic. Like,
I mean, I don't even need the love triangle, but just the fact that she's so important to the whole team.
Oh, she totally is. Yeah, she's the heart. But the thing was is that you had that moment where, with him, which I thought was great. So he's in his head and he's talking to Jean and saying, how much he misses her and all that sort of stuff. And she's telling him he's got to let go, and he's got to let go of his anger and his revenge and all this sort of stuff. And outside in the real world, he just, Cyclops is about to kill him, and he mutters Jean, and that makes Cyclops pause, and like it just like the weight. And I honestly think I wouldn't be surprised if this is laying the groundwork to bring her back. I wouldn't be surprised if that's not in the plans in like the next 2 years, because you don't play around with this imagery that much without having a reason. They're going to go back to, oh, do you remember in that issue, that sort of thing. But
best scene of the week of the entire week of comics was afterwards. He's back and Cyclops shows up with a six pack and he wants to talk about Jean because he obviously saw her.
Yeah,
and you can just see the pleading. I mean, even though that Cyclops has been with Emma now for 8 years, he's just like, did you see Jean? And there's the great look from Acuna on Cyclops' face, and Wolverine just sort of walks away.
Yeah,
really emotionally impact. Plus the Nightcrawler stuff. I mean, this was a perfectly balanced, just like the Punisher one we talked about last week.
Yep.
Jason Aaron's firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, this was easily my pick of the week. This might have been one of the best arcs of Wolverine and best issues of Wolverine I've read in a long, long time. It was just great. It was great. So, yeah, totally would have been my pick of the week. Are you right? I don't even love Acuna either. You know, like, you know, similar to the complaints you had about Tan. Not saying that I love Tan, but like, I don't love Acuna. But even this, I thought he rose to the challenge and came out really good. I loved on the outside with Phantom X and Dr. Nemesis were awesome.
Yeah, they were good.
Were like really, really funny. I mean, you got both two very somewhat sarcastic, somewhat very upfront, very kind of, you know, like honest kind of characters, kind of fringe X characters, you know, and you've got, you know, Dr. Nemesis with a gun, a disease gun that's basically shooting the plague and mouth cancer and all this stuff because they're just trying to, you know, wear down his healing factor. It was just really, really clever and really just really smart. And what I loved is that they're just pummeling him. Like Phantom X is shooting bullets at him. Dr. Nemesis is shooting the diseases at him, and then the demon possessed Wolverine spits out fire, and you just have Phantom X going, "Let's never do this again." Just like, yeah,
really good.
Yeah, really, really good.
The X universe is a really strong place right now.
Yeah,
at least between those three or four books.
Oh yeah, no, it looks like the core now is Uncanny X Men, Uncanny X Force, and Wolverine. With those three, you will not go wrong. Yeah, so
I was enthusiastic. Yeah. I forgot what the pick of the week was.
Yeah.
Did you know that iFanboy is part of the digital comics company Graphically?
What?
It is. I know you're like, oh, that would explain.
That's what those meetings are every week.
The meetings. We have over 3,000 comics. That's growing even more. There's a truckload of them coming in addition to that. Ready to download and read. Publishers like Marvel, Archaea, Boom, Top Cow, Archie. I can keep going because there are a lot of publishers.
Over like 150 publishers. It's ridiculous.
Yes.
Lots of comics.
Something absurd.
Something for everyone.
Definitely. Yeah. And speaking of which, you can read them on your iPhone, your iPad, your Android phone, your desktop, on the web. I feel like there are more options, but that might be all. And either way, you're pretty much covered for all sorts of different ways to read that stuff. And there are lots of cool things coming from Graphically this year. I know that there are some commentaries that I did recently that are going to be on some books very, very soon, and other cool things, and all sorts of fun books. I think that I've covered all the things that there is to say about it. But,
yeah, we got a lot of cool stuff going on. In fact, our 3,000th book came out and was The Darkness, number 84, which you can get for 50% off. We got some cool stuff. There's an Archaea book called Bleed Out, which is a great graphic novel with a ton of great creators that ties into a massively multiplayer online game that you can check out. And if you sign up for the game, you'll be able to get the book at half price. So we're going to be finding, you know, if you go to check out Graphically on Twitter, twitter.com/graphically, you can see all these kind of updates. A lot of stuff coming out in the next couple of weeks in terms of cool ways to get to discover new books, including Marcosia. There's still a couple of days left on that promotion, right?
Yeah, you'll be able to do that through the rest of April. Any book you buy will make you eligible to read all the 140 books that Marcosia has on there. All sorts of really good stuff all across the line.
So buy one, get 139 for free.
Possibly. And it's just like every kind of genre, every kind of book you want, from the sort of grassroots indie book to, you know, Marvel stuff. It's sort of all in there, and you can sort of get yourself on a little run where you're like, oh, I've been meaning to read this, and just tear through all of Ron Mars's Witchblade or something like that. Great books, you know, just tons of stuff all over the place. So it really behooves you to go in there and read it, and you get to read it the way that you want to, whatever your preferred ingestion device is. So get over to graphically.com. You'll get all the information and links to download whatever app you want and things like that.
You make it sound so dirty. Ingestion device.
Kind of dirty.
Yeah.
I like that. It sounds technical. It sounds like you're doing something.
You know what books are on there? The Infinity Gauntlet.
Yes.
Yes,
which you've never read.
Because Avengers number 12 brought back the Infinity Gauntlet.
It was awesome. I do have a complaint about this. Well, we'll get to it on a little later, but I loved this story arc so much.
The gems?
I don't know what it is about the Infinity Gems and the Infinity Gauntlet, but this was here's a moment in the comic book store. I'm standing at the counter in my comic book store, not the one I own, the one I shop at, because I don't own any.
You don't go on the one you own.
I know. Yeah, I don't. Yeah. Well, you know, it's in another state. It's hard to no. But and so I was flipping through my books, and I was talking to the store owner, and then he had to help a customer. So I was flipping through, and I wasn't reading it, but I was just kind of flipping through the pages, and I got to the part where the Red Hulk is being dragged by the hood through. The hood has the reality gem, and the Red Hulk has the power gem, and the Red Hulk pummeled the hood in the face, and his face got all disfigured for the rest of the issue, which I thought was awesome. But so then the hood starts going through multiple realities looking for a reality that the Red Hulk doesn't exist in. And what you've got is you've got this great John Romita Jr. art that's layered on top of the multiverse art by the artist who did it. So they cross over into the Marvel Zombies world, and it's Sean Phillips' art behind them. And then they cross over into, I don't know which one that is, but they cross over into over House of M, and it's Copiel art. They cross over the Squadron Supreme world, and it's that old Squadron Supreme kind of art. They cross over to the Ultimates, and you see Brian Hitch Ultimates art, you know, and like, and then finally you see behind them like Age of Apocalypse kind of Exiles kind of art, and it's in that style. And it was just like, and that made my jaw drop as a Marvel fan. I was like, oh, multiverses, I love it. It was just great. It was, oh, it was so much fun. And it ultimately ends with Tony donning the Iron Gauntlet. He grabs all the gems and gets a Infinity Gauntlet on his arm, which is and then you know, fools everybody into thinking that he wishes the gems out of existence, but turns out he just hid them again, and the Illuminati gets back together and decides they need to hide him, but this time they've got Steve Rogers in their midst
in place of Black Bolt.
Yep, exactly. And he agrees with Tony that yes, they, you know, he understands and that they need to find a better place to hide it. Now here's my nitpick.
Yep.
Is that, and this is, and this is timely because I just heard Bendis on the Word Balloon on Bendis Tapes, and somebody asked how much, you know, writing the Avengers and other characters in the books, how far ahead are you, whatever, and he said how he actually doesn't keep that far ahead on Avengers. He only keeps like two or three issues ahead because he doesn't want to, you know, deal with what's going on in the other books. He doesn't want to go too out of the way and run into conflicts or anything like that. Now that said, and I understand you got to write it so that every book can be read by themselves, but there's a scene at the end of the book when Steve basically asks the Red Hulk to join the Avengers, and you get the sense that Steve has never talked to the Red Hulk before, when for the past 8 months, the Red Hulk's been working for Steve Rogers in the Hulk book. Bendis lives in the same town as Jeff Parker. I don't understand why they just can't discuss this. But the way he talked about it, the way he was talking to him, it felt to me as if they had never, doesn't, what about the stuff that's going on in Hulk where he's working for Steve Rogers? You know, like, so.
I think you're going to get an email.
I'm sure I will. I don't care.
I didn't get that sense at all.
Yeah, I did. I mean, that was my only nitpick about it, was that it didn't as the reader of the Marvel Universe, and I understand continuity's tough and whatever, that would have been a nice place to at least refer to it or some way. You know, I don't know, like, you know, based off the stuff you did for me with these missions and what you've done here, I see you should be an Avenger, that sort of thing. You know, so but I don't know. Like I said, it was a nitpick. So, minor. But.
He asked her a resume. He was like, "Can I see this?"
Yeah, oh, and you are, and you are. Mark. But yeah, but Avengers 12 was great. But Hulk 32 was beautiful. And
it was.
And any time you have Hulk slapping a tornado in half wins, yeah, as far as I'm concerned. Talk
it
about
does.
Yeah.
But here's the thing: when you're talking about halves, I loved that part.
Yeah,
I don't so much care about the supervillain.
I totally agree with you. I got really wordy in the beginning, and I was just like, I don't know if I care about this. Yeah,
but then so. It was, but like the story of Hulk on the run from this guy who has him dead to rights, and he falls asleep, and his brain starts to explode, and then he saves a bunch of people from a tornado.
Yep,
that's all great. The 0-1 stuff, it's fine. It's not bad. I just don't care.
Yeah, I have the same feeling. Yeah.
But you know, it looks great. The you know, it's fun stuff. There could be some fighting coming up. That might be fun. Yeah. But it just took a little extra effort to get there.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. I think similarly, Dark Horse Presents number one was awesome.
Yeah.
Across the board, almost, the art was fantastic. The story's hit and miss because that's an anthology, will happen. Every story won't be greater for you, but I was a big fan of Dark Horse Presents back when it was originally out.
Oh, totally.
That's how I found a lot of these creators and these titles. And so I'm glad it's back. Hopefully it succeeds. It's a big 80-page anthology, $7.99, twice a month, every other month. Good stuff in here. Did you guys?
Oh yeah, no. I mean, talk about getting comics for your money. I mean, for $7.99 is a high price point, but you know, it's nice, perfect bound. So it's got that square kind of spine, you know, glossy cover, thick paper, and if you look at the names that are involved in it, I mean, like we finally get a brand new Concrete story, which is, you know,
that
for
was good.
Yeah, for people who don't know about Paul Chadwick Concrete, it's so good. You know, you get good shaken. In my mind, you got great Neil Adams.
story was
it was out there, but yeah. you get a sneak peek at the new 300 story from Frank Miller, which yeah, so that happened. You know, and then you get some other great creators, which is a little bit of everything for everybody.
Beautiful Richard Corbin story.
Yep.
Didn't so much love the Star Wars story, but the Snow Angel was good. Just everything in that. I love the personality quiz at the end. I laughed heartily at the end of that one.
Yeah. Finder. You get a color Finder story, which is great.
I've never read Finder before, and I love that.
Yeah. Finder's great.
That was really good. Finder is good.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can't recommend this anymore. If you want good comics, you should get Dark Horse Presents.
There's nothing like this really going on.
No, there's not. Yeah, Marvel tried to bring up Marvel Comics Presents, and it didn't.
Technologies don't seem to do well. And Zatanna 12 was notable for a couple of reasons. One, it was really good. It was a fill-in from Matthew Sturgis, who I think is well-suited for this subject matter, sort of the superhero magician type. But for two reasons. One, Ron, it's a celebration of San Francisco.
Oh, really? Yeah.
At one point, she goes to a taqueria, and I suddenly became very hungry.
That's awesome.
Talking about how great the taquerias are in San Francisco.
Oh, so good.
I'm so hungry. But the other reason I wanted to mention is because it was an aspect of Zatanna I've never seen dealt with before, which was that she was studying with flashcards how to say words backwards.
Clever.
And somebody asked her, but she says, "Well, I don't just automatically know how to say these words backwards.
That's awesome.
Learn them. I don't know every word automatically backwards, so I have to expand my vocabulary." So that was a very interesting sort of aspect of the character I'd never thought about before. She was in her dressing room doing flashcards.
That's really cool.
And I was like, ooh, that's very, very clever. Yeah. So I enjoyed that. Amanda Connor cover, great. Good, you know, very fun sort of one-and-done story while they wait for Paul Dini to submit some more scripts. But but I loved that little, you know, when you find a new piece of the character you have never thought of before, it makes total sense. Yeah. It was very clever. Good job by Matthew Sturgis.
Cool. Awesome. So those are the books that came out this week that we enjoyed. And if you go to ifanboy.com/comics, you can do your pull list. You can come back and rate and review your books and interact with the community and all stuff like that. But we asked last week whether you liked the recapping of the top five pick we presented. I was surprised how many people said they liked it, so we'll stick with it. So, which is really cool. So,
Josh, this is your week. Why don't you recap the picks of the week?
I will. The fifth, it is at the time of recording. The fifth most popular book was Uncanny X-Force number 8 with a 5.8%. Number 4 was Avengers number 12 with a 7.1%. These are all Ron's. Number 3 was Green Lantern number 65 at 8.5%. After that, number 2, Sixth Gun number 11 with 21.3%, which is pretty good and probably not indicative of the industry overall, but I'll take it. And number 1 was Invincible number 79 with 22%.
And again, the entire iFanboy community and Josh blew it because Wolverine didn't make the top five. But hey,
yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
So you can be involved with that by going to ifanboy.com/comics, make your pull list, and then there's a little button on your page to make your pick of the week, and that's how you can make your voice heard. And it's interesting to see. It's always interesting to look at the percentages every week.
I love doing that. It's awesome. And
I like the weird spikes at the beginning of Wednesday.
Yeah, as everyone runs to go rate them and stuff like that. It's really good. And for those of you who are doing your ratings and your reviews, I know several creators who are watching as well. Like they're checking to see what everybody else liked, and they're checking to read the reviews and stuff like that. So it's always fun. So
they're also competitive.
Yeah, they're very competitive. But speaking of that, not only can you rate your books, but you can also write a review. And we've got a couple of reviews we want to share with you here. And the first one comes from Hakider, who reviewed Green Lantern number 65, and he gave the story a 2 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And Green Lantern, as we said, was the top the number 3 on the top 5 pick of the week, so 8.5%. And Hakider says that the story was passable and featured some great character moments. Other than a moment where 4 Human Lanterns chose other color rings, featuring Hal telling everyone to choose their color, then demanding John take a different color because clearly Hal knows better. awkward. Green Lantern mostly feels like a rote by the numbers exercise of the moment, but the banter between Hal and Guy remains entertaining. The art was the best part of this comic, honestly. I like Doug Monkey's work, and that hasn't changed, though the purple bandana on John's compassion outfit is a bit ill-advised. Altogether, this is a fun read with a few questionable story choices. I'll stick around for the end of the War of the Green Lanterns, but I'm honestly not sure how much longer I'll be picking this up. And I gotta agree with them, that was a weird scene. Did you read, Connor, are you gone?
I was gone.
So basically what's happened is that all of, like, so the team of the Lantern Corps that Hal teamed up with, you know, like, what's his name, Red Lantern dude, Atrocitus and Carol Ferris and Sinestro, they all got sucked into the big book of Oa, the big black book, and so now Hal and Guy Gardner can't use their green rings because the Lantern's been tainted with the impurity, and so Hal finds a spaceship that he had hidden, and they go to Oa, and they meet up with Kyle and John Stewart, who also aren't using their rings, and so they're powerless, but then Hal goes, but I've got all the rings of the people that I was working with, so we can use them. And they're like, well, it's a risk, we're taking our chances. He's like, yeah, but it will work, you know, like, we can use our will and it will work for it, so everyone pick your ring. And so Guy's like, fine, I've used the red ring before, I'll use that. And Hal goes, okay, well, I've got experience with the yellow, I'll use that. And Kyle's like, all right, well, I guess I'll take him, you know, I'll take hope. And then John goes for orange, and I was like, whoa, you don't want none of this. Like, it was like totally out of that Walk Hard with Tim Roth, with Tim Meadows, you know.
wait, did you just cast, yes, Tim Meadows as John Stewart?
No, as Hal Jordan. Hal Jordan.
Which would be awesome.
I would watch the shit out of that movie.
And so Hal's like, whoa, you don't want any of this. It's not you. Here, take this. And John's like, compassion? And he's like, you've always had that. He's like, okay. And so now those Green Lanterns now have donned the rings of those other lanterns. And so it just, yeah, it's just like, you don't want any of this.
You don't.
Tim Meadows is the funniest part of that movie.
Tim Meadows stole that movie. Yeah, that was great.
Tim Meadows is the funniest part of anything he's in.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say. That's always a true statement.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's Green Lantern. And yeah, I mean, the abandonment of Green Lantern seems to continue. Everyone I talk to is bailing. So
that's so weird.
Yeah.
Duraflame. I got it. Duraflame Tree, Thunderbolts. Maybe I don't got it. Duraflame Tree reviewed Thunderbolts 156 and gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 4 out of 5. And 1.9% of the fan base made it their pick of the week, which was not enough for the top 5.
Oh, sadly.
Duraflame Tree says, Satana's intro to the team is hilarious and puts her teammates on edge. The interviews for the second team of Thunderbolts had some great character interactions, with my favorite being the bonding between Shocker and Mach 5, and the disappointment in Calvin Zabo's face when he realizes they don't want him. They just want Mr. Hyde. This is the Gathering the Team issue, and is a fun one. Kev Walker does an excellent job of giving all the characters unique faces, and it helps since there are a lot in this issue. The cover is a nice take on the classic who'll be the next to win the team image. All in all, a great issue.
It's not wrong.
It was good. I enjoyed it. I totally...
But I think there was two different things going on, so it didn't like have the feeling of like you want to throw your fist up and you're like, that was great.
It was an in-between issue. It was good.
But it was totally entertaining, and I don't know Satana, and it was kind of like, well, this is a weird thing to put in there. And I think that's something that Jeff Parker's really good at. It's just take some odd character that people don't use and throw them in there and do something with it. And then, all that interviewing stuff was fun. Like,
this got kind of Hellboy-ish in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah.
When the first shot of the castle, I was like, ooh, that looks very much Mignola.
Yeah.
Hellboy. And then you open up and there's like, what, zombie Nazis or whatever?
Actually. Yeah, well, they were like pre-Nazis.
German World War One. Yeah.
One thing I noticed is that Kev Walker actually draws noses just a little bit like Jeff Lemire does. I actually saw it a couple of times.
Wide noses, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I've never seen anybody do that. But there's definitely a connection there that I noticed.
Yeah.
People get punched in the face a lot in the Marvel Universe. So.
They do. So those are some of the reviews that were up there. So go to ifanboy.com/comics and do your pull list and rate and review them. And the community grows, and we love to see more voices get in there. So very cool. So.
Now let us talk about the book of the month. We made it. We slid into the base, as it were.
It might be a good time for Josh to – Josh, you might want to take a breather. You might want to take a break.
I don't like sports. But I love sports movies and stories.
Well, okay. Well, so let me. I had the book of the month. duties this month, and I apologize, it was a couple weeks late. This seems to have been a pattern these past couple of months with the cons. It got crazy, but I also was wrestling with trying to find the right book for it, and you know, and quite often, you know, we said when we first started doing the book a month, there are no rules. It can be a older book, it can be, you know, but we kind of lean towards newer releases and this sort of thing. And so I always try to, I look at what's coming out and what do I want to try, and I picked up a couple of books I was considering, but then actually Chris Niesman did a Don't Miss podcast with the creator Wilfred Santiago about a book called 21, the story of Roberto Clemente that Fantagraphics is putting out. And it comes as no surprise or no shock that myself, Connor, Chris Niesman, Tom Caters, we're all baseball fans, you know, in our own rights. And actually, I was listening – what podcast was I listening to? I think I was listening to Around Comics, they remembered to do an episode. And Tim Seeley was on, and they were talking – of Hack Slash Fame, and they're talking about how there's really little to no difference between baseball nerds and comic nerds. Like, and so it's not a surprise that so many of us are into baseball and that sort of stuff, because there's a lot of, you know, it's your people in uniform and who do you root for and who do there's you ally? Continuity. Yeah, exactly. It's continuity. And what I think is great.
You get upset about ridiculous things.
It's not ridiculous. I mean, if you leave a pitcher in too long.
Jay Buhner!
What did you try, Jay Buhner?
But also the thing about what I think baseball is that it's common with comics is that it has legendary figures and tales and stories that really become passed down through the generations.
Stories that become legend.
Exactly. And in baseball, it just happens to be that there are real people as opposed to the, you know, the fictitious people of comic books. But so I was like, oh, I should take a look at that book. So I picked it up and I read it, and first off, I fell in love with it. Wilfred Santiago did a great job of – basically, it's a biography of the Pittsburgh Pirates outfielder Roberto Clemente, who, if you don't know who he was born and raised in Puerto Rico. He came up in the major leagues in the late 50s, early 60s, after the color barrier was broken, and he played for the Pittsburgh Pirates, and he was phenomenal. I mean, like of when you talk about the greatest players of all time, the dude could hit – like nobody's business, and could feel like he was just well-rounded.
Rocket for an arm.
Yeah. Oh, it was. I mean, we talk now in baseball like five-tool player and stuff like that. He was fast. He could hit. He could field. He could throw. It was amazing. And unfortunately, it's a tragic story because his life was ended far too short. And actually, after the 1972 season, in the last game of the season against the New York Mets, he got his 300th hit. 3,000th hit, which is a huge milestone to make for any ball player. And then the season ended, and there was a horrible earthquake in Nicaragua, and Clemente was very involved in humanitarian efforts, especially in around Central America. And New Year's Eve, he himself chartered a plane and was hand-delivering supplies to Nicaragua, and the plane went down. And he died.
Never to be found again.
Yeah, never. They never recovered his body. You know.
When will Sean Penn take a lesson from this?
And when you're telling this whole story, it's not. This book is not just a baseball story. I think baseball's half of the book, the most. The first half is his growing up in Puerto Rico.
Yeah, well,
and then the last half is his family stuff.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm getting to. And I mentioned this in my review. When I read this book, it reminded me when I was a kid. I used to sit down. There were so many books about baseball and baseball players and their stories and their lives. And I can't tell you how many books I read from like 1984 through like 1990, where I just absorbed as much as I could. And as I got older, the books got more complex. So when I was younger, they were very simple, and it was like, Joe DiMaggio practiced really hard, and then he became the greatest ball player he could, all the way up to the complex issues of like the Black Sox scandal and things like that. So I read them all. But what I found interesting, the ones that I remember the most and the ones that I love the most were the ones that were about the ball players, the people. Like, I read about Lou Gehrig and the person that Lou Gehrig was, and how he was elegant and noble, and didn't want the spotlight as much as Babe Ruth. You know, he's in the shadow of Babe Ruth and all that sort of stuff. And then him getting sick and dealing with that, and people, you know, like, and admittedly, you know, sometimes as kids, you know, they glorify. I mean, Ty Cobb was an asshole. We know that, but there were key lessons that we learned from these ball players growing up, where I learned about, you know, hard work and work ethic and tenacity and all these kind of important lessons through the lens of baseball and through the lens of the people playing the baseball. So the stories that resonated the most for me were the ones that were about the people. And this is what this book very much was. It was about Roberto Clemente's growing up. It was about his experience in Puerto Rico, his experience playing in the Negro Leagues, dealing with the color barrier. You know, I was surprised very little actual baseball. You know, yes, like,
but
yeah,
what there was,
yeah,
was gorgeous. This book on a whole is beautiful.
Yeah, totally.
Wilfred Santiago is amazing, and baseball is hard to capture. We've talked about this a while ago.
Yep,
it's been a while since we talked about it, but baseball is hard to capture in still imagery and drawings because it's so fluid. There's so much movement, but this is the best I've ever seen done in drawings. There's a Satchel Paige book that was pretty good, and there was the Gollum's Mighty Swing, which is pretty good. But this is the most beautiful I've ever seen anyone draw people playing baseball.
Yeah, and what's great is that Santiago subtly uses mixed media, in that he's, you know, he's drawing, and his drawings are great, and the tones and the colors are amazing. But then he'll also factor in a photograph or what I loved was like the original art of like newspapers or the programs or the ticket. Like he works into his artwork, so you really get I felt like I was in 1960 watching the World Series. Like you get a real feel for the era that it takes place in, the time period that it takes place in. And
I love the evil Yankee introduction.
Yeah, the Bronx Bombers with the bomber and everything. Yeah, it was
great. They look like villains though.
Yeah, it was great. And what I loved was that like he recaps Clemente's entire career on one page. And it happens to be the same page celebrating his marriage to his wife, Vera. And you've got the picture of Clemente and his wife, you know, kind of in their wedding thing. And around it are flowers and then just like this tape of all of his achievements through the 60s. And the lower bar of the page is like a perspective shot of him as the player. And so you see, you know, he wins the MVP. He makes the All-Star team. He gets the batting title. You know, gets the best average title. But what was more important was that he, you know, was married and had a family. And, you know what I mean? So it balances those two things really, really well. So book was great. I mean, it was just – it's the kind of thing where I want to hand to any kid who's into baseball and learn about Roberto Clemente, celebrate baseball, celebrate the important things of, like, giving back to your community and the things that Clemente stood for, but also learn a little at the same time. So,
and you can read it as a non-baseball fan.
Exactly. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
And that's all – I mean, that's always the case. That, yeah. You know, I can be not a sports fan, but I – you know, I'll read that Black Sox book. I love the idea of how celebrity works, like, in terms of different eras. And what years – was he active? Was he playing? You said he died in 72.
Well, he died in 72.
He came up in like 57 or 58, I think. Okay. Yeah.
He played for a while.
Yeah.
When did it integrate? Or when did the Negro Leagues cease?
Negro Leagues didn't see. Well, Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier in 47.
They limped along for a while. The players started getting poached from the Negro Leagues, and the stars left the Negro Leagues, and the league slowly died.
Yeah, you get a really interesting kind of conversation there, where Branch Rickey, who was the guy who brought in Jackie Robinson, and they show the conversation about Clemente, and he's kind of saying, "No, not yet." Like they controlled the flow of African American players in the major leagues for the first 8 years or so, and then by the mid 50s it was you know full on, and then the Negro Leagues ended. So,
the thing that's interesting about baseball is how long a career can last in that way.
Oh, the players play 20
longer than any other sport.
Yeah, 20, 30 years. I mean, Don Sutton was like 47, right? Or so crazy.
I was really impressed with the final page. I was as I was reading it, you know, I'm of course knowing about Roberto Clemente, wondering how they're going to get to the death.
Yeah.
It was very elegantly handled, very subtle, very emotional.
Yep. So well, and it's the design of this book, everything. Everything was beautiful. Fantagraphics did such a great job. It's $22.99, nice hardcover. It's perfect. You know, it just it totally captured baseball in this guy's life in a great way that only graphic novel storytelling could do. So
cool.
Check it out if you're into baseball. So yeah,
I am sold.
And go to ifanboy.com and you check it out. You can read my review and you can comment there. And there's a link to buy it on Amazon. So check it out.
Awesome.
All right, we got some email.
Let's go ahead and rip through these before we get going. First one up, Andy from Cincinnati. He wrote Cincy, but I'm not going to say that. I thought I was done with back issues. I was on the trade bandwagon, and these few issues I needed to complete any runs I wanted to keep, I had finally purchased. So he was all set. Then today I go into my LCS, and the owner shows me a complete run of Miracle Man. Now it looks like I'll be buying back issues for some time. My question is... like a junkie. My question is, what, if any, series or runs would you brave the back issue bins for?
Oh, well, I've answered this before.
Yeah. I mean, you're. Are you still working on your?
Well, I'm not. I'm not actively working on it because my collection is in because I've been so busy at work. My collection is in bad shape, so I don't actually know what I have. So I need to spend a couple of days and just like go through what I've got and get them back in order and then make a list and go through. But
I'm still doing All Star Squadron. You still doing that?
No. I pretty much stopped everything. I wanted to get All Star Squadron. I wanted to get Defenders, and I wanted to work on my Uncanny X-Men run. And I just haven't done it. So.
When was the last time you
back issue dove?
No, well, like when was the last time you were like, I got an Uncanny X-Men that I didn't have?
It's in the past within the past year. Within the past year. Okay. Yeah.
So it's still.
Yeah, I look. Like in Chicago, when I snuck away, when I snuck away at C2E2, it was half the time I spent looking at original art, half the time was flipping through the back issues. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Connor, are you?
No, I mean, I was thinking. I was reading the email before we did the show, and I was thinking, like, if I was super rich, I would probably look for like old, like seminal issues.
Yeah.
But maybe if I was bored, I'd probably do something other. Like I'd probably spend my time doing something else. But there's very little in anything.
He means women.
Yeah.
There's very little, if anything, I would be doing to go into a back issue bin for this.
And Josh, you don't care, right?
No, I actually was thinking not. But like, if there was a like new collection of Miracle Man, I would rather have that than the issues. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need to have those issues, but I would like to have that whole story. At some point, like we share it, like that episode of The Simpsons. Like, we have them all
right
between us, but we don't really. But I think, like Connor said, like one thing I would like to do would be to have sort of certain seminal issues. There are things I'd love to have. I'd love to have Showcase 22, which is the first Hal Jordan. Okay. And I have first
stuff like that would be fun. That's something that's actually
interesting,
worthwhile, and has a place in history. Like
I have the first Hawkeye. I have the first Inhumans. Like, I like those kind of things. Those are kind of cool. But I don't want to have runs. I don't care about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I would like to get some seminal kind of, seminal issues, but I also would like, I want my runs. So. Yeah, I got the runs. All right, moving on.
And, we want to follow up on something we talked about last week. Was a store where a girl had a woman, I don't know. She
Megan,
had a
had a bad experience.
In Rochester, right?
At a shop called Comments, etc. And somebody else wrote in to tell us about their experience with the store, and we thought equal time, I just wanted to respond to the pick of the week, episode 280.
This is Robert.
Robert.
We can't read this whole thing.
In Rochester, New York. That said, I frequented Comets, etc. every Wednesday this past winter. Had nothing but good shopping experiences every time I went in there. The owner and one of his employees are super down to earth guys. And when I told them I was from out of town, they immediately set me up with a weekly discount coupon. And even when I forgot the coupon every Wednesday, they gave it to me anyway. I'd always hang out for a bit. We'd have comic talk. Another guy steered me towards indie stuff and a great dim sum place down the street. If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have picked up all the books that I'm currently in love with. The guys at Comets, etc. made my stay in Rochester a bit more tolerable and sane when I was away from my life and friends. It's sad to hear that such a nice guy who is trying to own a small business and also does a lot of work within his community had to get that kind of press, especially in a town like Rochester that had fallen on hard times in the past few years. So Robert has said he had a good experience at this store, and we don't want to paper it one way or another.
Megan actually commented in the comment section of the show last week and said that she had actually put in contact with the owner, mm-hmm. and they worked it out. Apparently the people that she dealt with weren't normal employees and or people that worked there. It was very sort of nebulous. In Robert's email, he said that he had dealt with some bad sort of weekend employees. People who don't regularly work there, there's been a couple of instances of bad employees there. But for the most part, the experience is not that bad. And Megan said that she talked to the owner and worked it out. She felt all right now about the store.
So she kind of rescinded, but said that it wasn't completely consistent experience from that store, that it might have been a one-time kind of particular people were there that caused it to be a negative time that time.
Regardless. Which is good. They're exonerated somewhat. But, if you're at a bad shop and you don't like the experience you have, don't buy it from them. If it's the only place you can get comics, you're just keeping them going if you do.
And you can get books online. You can go to Discount Comic Book Service and a whole bunch of other places online, or hopefully the next town over or something like that. But it's good. And that she kind of spoke up and we talked about the issue and that sort of thing. And I'm glad to hear that the store isn't completely awful. So
and it was a good issue to talk about because those stores do exist, sadly.
Yeah. So cool. So if you have any questions, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com, or you can call us on our voicemail line at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. No voicemails this week because we ran a little long talking about the book of the month, but we got a bunch in the queue and we'll get to them next week. So if you're not listening to iFanboy Don't Miss, you are missing out. It's one of my favorite podcasts that we do. It comes out every Monday. It's a short little 15-20 minute conversation with the creator about a book that's coming out. And this week Connor gets in on the action.
This week I talked to Judd Winnick about Generation Lost, Justice League Generation Lost number 24, the final issue, the almost double-sized final issue. We talk about the issue a bit, the whole series in general, how, you know, a little bit of Justice League International. There's sort of a very interesting discussion about the book. It's very exciting. He's very excited to get people to read it.
Cool. We're big fans of Judd, so it's always good to hear from him. So
And it's supposed to be action-packed.
Yeah.
It's a 30-plus page fight scene.
Nice. Wow. So you can get that on ifanboy.com every Monday, or you can go to iTunes and subscribe to it. Please leave a review if you enjoy it. Tell your friends. Make sure you subscribe to it. Don't miss out. I know not everybody who listens to this podcast listens to Don't Miss. You need to change that. You need to listen to both of them. Come on, be a completist.
You need to get on that.
You need to get on.
Check out ifanboy.com. You can read my pick of the week, the review for Six Gun number 11. You could read Ron's whole review of 21, the story of Roberto Clemente, and all sorts of stuff. This week, I was very proud of our content this week. There's all sorts of really good, fun stuff, top to bottom, Monday through Friday, and on the weekends too. But just this week, it was a really good week. So if you're not, again, if you know you're listening to this show, but you're not listening to the show, or you're listening to something but not going to the website, go to the website. We work really, really hard on that.
This is a great week. It was a great week.
Oh, totally a great week.
Yeah.
Who are those guys?
Who are them?
iFanboy.com/about will tell you who we are and all the different social network links that you can. That you can go through to talk to us about things. That is also the video show. Last week was the second part of WonderCon.
Or part six of the
con saga, yeah.
So predictably, next week, we're back on the couch. Yep. So if you've been looking forward to that, we're gonna do a nice, comfortable old vault show. We talk about some books that we liked on the couch. Yep. So that'll be fun.
That exciting vault show. You'll find out why next week.
Yes. Mm. And as I mentioned, you can email us at contact@fanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. Always good to hear from you.
And as we said, write a review on iTunes if you like this show, for the Don't Miss show, for the video show, for Word Balloon, for every show you listen to. It really helps people find their shows. When people search for podcasts, the more reviews, the easier it is to find stuff. So everyone who does a podcast appreciates when you write a review on iTunes. Thank you very much.
Yes. Cool. So jam-packed podcast to end last week, to start this week. Hope you enjoyed it. Until next time, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I am Josh. Thank you very much, everyone.
This is oddly formal.
I know. I never do that. Yeah. So I was like,
you know. I'll try it. I'll give it a shot.
It felt good. I'm not going to lie. It was nice. I was just the guy in the office that time.
I'm just the guy.
I wasn't the wacky guy in the office.
And if you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again. If you ever make it to 10, you won't make it again.